Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. And it's all fraud because so much of the expenditures not only exceed the debt that we're taking, the fraud is spending the legitimate revenues that our government has been bringing in. And that they've been doing this for well over a century, before even the income tax or the 16th Amendment. So anyway, please, folks, please, please, please learn, pray, act. Please start shifting the conversation away from conservative and focus on the Constitution. And what I want to do is kind of, because I say this all the time, and we just kind of go straight into content. I think this begs a time, and we got just a little bit to read of the Articles of Confederation. And so, not that we only got a year to cover all this content. So deviating into these deeper discussions can cost us the ability to cover the content, but I think sometimes we need to have these conversations, especially now, folks. We're just months away from the filing in your state for who's going to run for your congressional representative, your county commissioners. All the election season has to begin now. And so welcome back, Sean, by the way. Because Sean is going to be engaged in this conversation, because this is kind of a conversation that we had earlier in a different phone call. But let me set the stage as we look at the difference between the progressive and the conservative paradigms. These political paradigms are fighting over the same coin. And so when you break down, you know, the spectrum of politics, there are the issues, right? There's the education as the issue, and I'm going to use education as the perfect example of how we can show you that your conservative politician and your progressive politician are, sorry about that, are literally on the same side of the river. They're not on different sides. They're just fighting for the same coin, but they represent a different side of that same coin. In other words, you have the progressive who has basically won so far in controlling the education system to have an immoral curriculum, and to literally, they've been weaponizing our children for decades and decades to destroy this constitutional republic. That has been their goal. And when I say this, wow, I mean, anybody listening that, you know, likes to take pride in them being objective and common sense, logic, reason, and they hear me take such a hard position, they think it's hyperbole. When we look up, and I've said this several times on my show, that when we look at the problems in the river today, or your homelessness, the immorality, all of the problems that our society is dealing with, the primary sources aren't right there at the shoreline of your river. That crap didn't get in there from your shoreline. That crap got into the river way upstream. And upstream will find the education system as one that feeds the problem of creating and enabling bad behavior, addictive behavior, and those, if it feels good, do it. And this lack of what they want to call morality. But the real problem, again, getting back to this one point on the education system, because it's definitely a big, it's a big, I'll just say, leaking of sewage in our river, you know, our water supply, in our society. It's destroying us. And that's not hyperbole. But focusing on the conservative and the progressive side, I've constantly said that the conservative only cares about the moral agenda and making sure that our education system is feeding the children the Bible and good things that they should have. The reality is, we already see what the progressives have been doing because they've been successful. They've already created the DEI. They created all this garbage, common core. I mean, this is all garbage that they're feeding our children. So the fact is, the only argument against the coin is the fact that the coin doesn't and should not exist. In other words, the federal government has no constitutional authority to be involved in any of this education. The only education that the federal government can fund, period, is the education and training of the militia. That's it. So in other words, the one thing that they need to be providing is what is necessary for our children when they turn 17 to be able to contribute. So that when they turn 17 and, you know, get out of school, they should be able to contribute to the militia if necessary, if we're already at war. We don't wait till we go to war to be ready. We have to start training people today because the cause is clear. Our enemies are all over. They're within us and they're all around us. We're the last bastion of liberty. And we don't have to necessarily fight a war because peace through strength, right? If everybody sees how well prepared we are and how well, you know, regulated our militias and so forth, nobody would even think about attacking America. But right now we're very vulnerable because we don't have the defense system that the Constitution demands. Isn't that interesting? But nevertheless, back to the education system. The education system, that coin that the progressives and the conservatives are fighting for, should not exist. It ends their argument. We don't need government discussing, especially at the federal level, discussing education or even looking at education if it's not militia training. So where does it go? It goes back to the states. Now, so this is where, like I said, we kind of had this conversation earlier, and this comes off as hyperbole, doesn't it, Sean? I mean, people probably hear that and go, this guy is so far out. I mean, we can't listen to him because he's not being reasonable.
No, I think it's more that people don't want to admit the extent that it's gone to. And like when you're talking about the coin and they're fighting over the coin, I think it's more that they're fighting over who's going to use the coin to inflict their doctrine on future generations. Because like you're talking about, a lot of this Marxist stuff and communist stuff that's entrenched in public education, it's not there by coincidence. It's a plan, and it's a long-term plan that's been going on for a long time, and now it's reaching existential, you know, focus on action. And we can see that all over the country in the performance level of the kids, the critical thinking ability, and how they've been able to just, you know, meld them into what they want them to be at certain places. Right. And the more they take away parents' ability and rights, which is a big push now, the easier access they have. And it's multiple vectors, like we were talking about in our earlier conversation. Uh-huh. It's political. It's through controlling the curriculum. It's through controlling the staff and the actual teacher population, right. And what they're taught, where they come from, their ideologies, okay. And just, you know, going at every angle.
Right. So technically, when one says that we need to get rid of and disband, that's technically demagoguery. Because demagoguery is just calling out that this is wrong, it's a problem. They don't have the authority to do it, but it's not actually providing what should we be doing.
Now, no, we need massive reform that starts at the local level.
Right, and so here's the question. When we look, because we need to start looking at our government as business, not as a profit business, but we don't want government to constantly bleed us because it employs everybody. In other words, when we look at the education system, it has this huge army of teachers. The teachers union is the largest union in the United States, and they're the most powerful. Think about what I'm saying, because if we get rid of the education system, the national system, and we completely destroy our current model and actually put in a 21st century education system, we would be head and shoulders in front of the world in academics. Head and shoulders, because technology would bring this to bear. Right now, people die spending, you know, they spend all sorts of money, parents work themselves to the bone to make sure that this child of theirs is going to go to the school where they have the best teachers. And I'm going to tell you that they're probably not the best teachers, but they have on par probably the higher percentage of good teachers, more good teachers than other schools. But wouldn't you want your children to have the best instructor for math, the best instructor for chemistry, the best and think about this, folks. In the virtual world, once the classes have been created, that's it. We're only paying the teacher for the content. In other words, for a subscription or what have you to use that content throughout the school year. In other words, I don't know how many teachers there are in the United States, but I can tell you if it's a million, it's probably a million too many. Because we can actually trim that down to how many topics are there that we would teach in elementary, junior high, and high school? That if we actually had the best teachers, maybe that would be a list of 200, maybe a list of 200 teachers that could create the curriculum, or I should say content to actually teach in the class, you know, for the broad spectrum of mathematics when it gets interjected in the, you know, in the elementary level, then to the junior high and then into high school. And this is why I constantly point to, and I've said this on this show, yaymath.org. I believe if you look at that one teacher and how well he reaches the students, people can start mimicking that type of thing in teaching chemistry. They can mimic that in literature, in history, all of these different things to where one teacher could actually create almost all of the courses for history. Because when we go through the model of teaching, each teacher has to come up with that one class, and then they teach that one class or two or three classes for an entire, you know, semester. And then they do it all over again. Well, shoot, this one brilliant teacher only has to do that one time in a recording. If you look at what he does in Yay Math, have you seen yaymath.org? You watched one of the shows or one of the courses?
Yes, I know.
Okay. And so, you know, it doesn't take much time. As a matter of fact, it doesn't even take a full, you know, what we would call a 40-minute period. I think it's literally like the videos are maybe 15, 20 minutes for him to teach a principle like factoring or what have you. And so when we take this paradigm of how we've structured the school system to suck 8 hours of our kids' time instead of giving them what they need to know and giving them the hints so that then they can go and start practicing and proving the theory of what they've been taught. And if it's correct, then boom, they move forward. If not, maybe they got to go back and kind of, what am I doing wrong? Bottom line, that person that's providing this great content could literally teach, provide the content for all math levels from, again, elementary through high school. Because how much time would it take for him to actually can these quality courses? And then that's it. We're not paying people by the hour anymore. And how much money would we be saving? Folks, you need to start looking at this a new paradigm. So where can we take our kids to school? Do they need to be in these big, huge, I'll call them these institutions where you got these huge classes and so forth? I say no. As long as you've got high-speed internet, your local church, a community center, where if the kids can't get their courses at home with homeschooling, because homeschooling is clearly much better, and if you can't provide that, then maybe the churches should. Instead of a union, a political apparatus that is designed to drive this nation down one very specific path. This is a huge problem. And until we start talking about the problem and solutions like real adults putting everything on the table, we'll start realizing that we don't and we can't allow this system to exist. We're fools to not talk about it. In other words, if we're failing to plan in moving forward, we are planning to fail. These are all axioms that everybody knows resonates to the core. And as far as I'm concerned, the conversation has to start with you, and you have to start demanding this. And you can start doing this down at the county level by using petitions and so forth. That's the whole essence of why we're giving you this content, why we're helping you become a constitutionalist and preparing yourself to be able to become that constitutionalist to represent the good people of your community and your county, so that you can lead this nation back from this monolithic, huge monstrosity of government apparatuses down to a limited and defined government again, so we, the people, can thrive again in the land of liberty, where we have a free market instead of a mercantile system. Anyway, so I don't want to dominate. So what's your take on these concepts? I mean, and do you not see the benefit of literally, I mean, how many teachers do you think America would really need? Because you being a teacher, because I'm marginalizing, I know, I'm really good at marginalizing. How many teachers do you think America really needs? 1,000?
No, I think that's going to the opposite extreme. Uh-huh. I think the focus should be on local community schools that provide what the children need in their communities.
Yeah,
so, and if you can do homeschooling, awesome. That's the best opportunity because your family is involved and they're taking accountability for your education. But when you have a lot of different circumstances that are gonna prevent that from happening. But at the same time, if you have local control of education, then you have the people in the community are bought into it. And they are controlling it. So that way you take away all the political and the big money and the power vectors that go along with the education system and the top down diagnostics that's made to fit a political narrative or a political or ideological agenda.
Right. So let me
take that completely out of it.
Okay. So
like I said before, the teachers who actually want to teach and want to help children learn how to think for themselves and increase their potential are going to flock to that because that's their passion. That's their calling, and that's what they'll do. But like I said before, just like in my case, most of the good teachers are being driven out because of this ideological vector that they put into the public education and the overarching control of this curriculum control that's coming from a whole different, you know, from marketing. And you know about Rockefeller and the early influence they had on shaping the curriculum. And instead of creating independent thinking individuals, they wanted workers.
Right. So,
and people who could do what they need them to do to enhance and benefit them, instead of benefiting the individual. And if you have local control where you have good teachers who are actually trying to teach curriculum instead of ideology and psychological, you know, influence on the kids, then you're going to be much better off and you're going to take away all of that power and control and nefarious influence away from those sociopaths.
Okay, so just to throw these things out. First off, the education system needs to be completely free market. I believe we don't need to have a pool of teachers. I believe that the people that are willing, that are subject matter experts, they can teach. And I think that they can create the courses if they want to, just like this guy with the AMATH. They want to teach kids. They love kids in a righteous way of empowering them with true and good knowledge. These other teachers are evil ideologues that want to sexualize. They want to pervert. They want to destroy your family and your children and their spirits. So if we have a free market, then the only – what you're talking about is a local board, a school board maybe, of parents.
No, what I'm talking about is local communities – of educators and parents.
Well, see,
that come together to create these schools, like charter schools and community schools.
I think that's a problem. And let me throw this in
and
here.
And they decide the curriculum based on,
You can't ignore, you cannot ignore society's need. So who is the recipient of education? Is it the child or is it the businesses and society that actually has to bring these kids into becoming productive members of their business and society? So one of the biggest problems we've always had is that the businesses, such as the engineering firms and medical or whatever, these technology firms and so forth, we need these kids to know these things. They're not at that table. They've never have been. And that's a huge problem. So that's why I'm saying we really need to dismantle it and say, how can we do this right so that we got, I hate to use the word stakeholders because that's a buzzword for people, but we need to get all the stakeholders, all the right people that actually have some skin in the game, because they're going to have to hire these kids and maybe employ them for a long period of time. And it should be a good experience, not a bad one. But my point is that I think that if we really started dismantling even this what we call school boards and try to revamp them, because it comes down to how can we make the best education system for ourselves locally. And you may not have any subject matter experts in your community that can give that level of enlightenment. So what do? You deal with the fifth best, the ninth best?
No. You integrate resources to enhance your curriculum to get it where you need it to be.
Yeah, because
you don't have someone who can teach a high level of chemistry, then of course you're going to need to find resources.
Right.
But it shouldn't be dictated by commercial interests or government interests or unions and ideological agendas.
Okay.
It should be based on the aptitude of the students involved. Everybody wants their child to be a doctor, but every person isn't.
Okay.
To be a doctor.
I don't think we're arguing. I think what I think is that the conversation has to actually be, you don't need to have a teacher in your community. Technically, the teachers are only babysitters. Right. They're given, these sheets of...
Whoa!
They're given
really? Have you ever taught?
Have I ever taught? Yes, I have. I've taught adults.
At college level.
Yeah, well, I've taught adults. And so I know it's a big difference.
It's a completely different world.
I understand that. But I know that the homeschooling, bar none, right now is producing the best, I'll say, the best byproduct out of education we got. And I think we could do a lot better, because I think if you're using the subject matter experts that can actually create these awesome classes on chemistry, math, all these different courses of literature and so forth. The best thing, by the way, is if it's all on video, you can get the full transcript of the video. You can scrub it and make sure that there's nowhere in that video or in that transcript these teachers are basically telling your children, you can't trust your parents anymore. They should never be uttering words like that they do in the classroom, where they have that autonomy and they have that secrecy. So in looking at how we can protect the children the best from even bad influences, I would say every course needs to be done in video, because a one-on-one, even though it's nice, it can be a one-on-one in the classroom with a facilitator maybe at the church, a facilitator at the community. But to be a teacher, to have the credentials and everything else to give them full autonomy to your child, those days got to go. Because like you just said, they completely weaponized this system.
So, well, at the same time, there's a whole bunch of other systems that we're talking about that are the same way.
Yeah, but
it
all
comes
of those
down to the community and the people involved in their children's education.
Okay, we got a break. We got to go on a break right here. So we'll bring this back after the break.
At a local level,
we'll bring this back after the break, folks. So it's good to have. I love these types of discussions. And when we come back, I'll let Sean finish what he's saying, and we can kind of keep going on this, and then we'll get into the Articles of Confederation. Sorry about the diversion, but I think it's necessary.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so we were just going into break when, Sean, you were saying something, so let me let you finish what you were saying. Go ahead. And you're not muted, so go ahead.
I'm sorry. You were talking about, I said a lot of things get generalized because you're looking at it from the outside, and I can see the way things are in present times, why people would feel that way about the access to kids and the credential, doing credentials, and you know, the teachers are just babysitters, and we can use technology, and we don't need the teachers. But there's a lot of things that go on with educating children through developmental years that you have to have the training to deal with that, like dyslexia and learning deficiencies and things like that. Where if you're teaching adults, you take them as they come, and usually the only people that you're seeing are people that are interested in hearing what you had to say and learning what you're talking about. When you're talking about educating children in a community, and like in modern times we have the populations that we have in cities and different places throughout the country, it's a whole different ballgame. You know, when you have all these kids that have developmental disabilities, and we could talk about how those came to be and everything like that, it's not as simple as just giving them the material, and if it's done right or good, then they're going to learn it. It just doesn't happen that way.
Okay, so the problem with every system that exists right now, it's all plugged into the financial systems of the existing system. In other words, they're all basically functioning around the strings that are attached to the money coming. And when you dismantle all of this, bottom line, this goes back to very fundamental questions. Are we to have a government that we can sustain ourselves? Are we going to have education in our county? If we are, can we afford the education that we want to have? Because if we don't have the tax base to do that, then are we literally going to open ourselves up to become the dependents of somebody else to give us what they want us to have? Because that's what happens. He who pays the piper calls the tune. And so having strict control over your own government is essential. Is education a part of our government system? And should it be? It wasn't. Under the Constitution, it was not a part of the government system. It was a part of the religious, or I should say, it was a compassionate service provided by the religions of the states. And so we have to really look at what do we need to do to get back to government being completely void of this. Can the religions support this at the community? Right now, with people not even paying an honest tithe, we're going to have lots of problems. There's going to be some paradigm shifts.
But I don't think they at all that the churches can handle it.
Not at this point.
When you look at it, what is even the church now? I mean, it's so fractured. I think state level funding the parishes in some kind of hybrid form of what we have now because you can't go from one extreme to the other.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't go from having everything being provided and the government paying for it to, okay, well, now you just do it on your own.
Right. Okay.
And we're not giving you any money to do it. That's ridiculous.
So what we're doing here is we're proving that this is a deep conversation, because absolutely, I'm an advocate of taking this completely away from the states, other than possibly providing infrastructure, facilitating, not having any real controls over it. Kind of like if the states took over the Department of Transportation or took over any of the domestic roles. I've mentioned before that we would amend the Constitution to allow the federal government, and we would dictate to the federal government what those taxes would be if there was going to be like a general funding of the road systems or what have you for key highway, rail, whatever. If the states all agreed, then we wouldn't want to create another IRS of collecting taxes for the state or the union. We would actually use the federal apportionment tax or whatever and have it centralized, because they're already taxing at that level. So my point is that I think that this is a discussion that has lots of people very interested. This is not hyperbole. Folks, we're adults. We have to have these adult decisions, because when the globalists take over, it's going to change even more dramatically. And it'll be harder, if not impossible, to dismantle. Because by this point in time, our sovereignty as a nation has been gone. And now everybody in the world will be invited here to control and regulate us. Because that's the good globalist, you know, smiley face that we'll all get. Hey, we're all a happy family now. Anyway, as this goes down this path of laying out the fact that we have real problems, and until we actually start having the discussions of what we need to do to solve it, but the reality is, as long as the federal government has and is able to exercise powers not granted, they will weaponize them and use them against us. Immigration is another case. Literally, the Department of Energy is another. Labor, everything that they've assumed, they've used as weapons against us. And education is probably one of the biggest, most corrupt, and most evil that they've placed upon us as a nation. So,
I absolutely agree with that. I think it is the fundamental issue,
right?
Because when you think about the future and how your country is going to grow and prosper and progress depends on the next generation and what they're taught and their morals and their principles. And the worse it gets, the worse the country's going to get.
Right. But under the original design, it was pretty much wide open. As a matter of fact, once we got away from the original 13 states, and once these new states started forming, the education system, because they didn't have, you know, these long-term institutions like Harvard, Yale, Princeton. I mean, those institutions had been around for, you know, maybe a century or so by the time the revolution came. So once we really started expanding, and expanding probably a little too fast for our britches, we had a lot of areas that just created voids, and they needed something, and it became more and more of a problem, which is one of the reasons why Horace Mann went out and did what he did and actually tried to, and they got away with inflicting a military style, you know, training system. Nevertheless, I'm not the king, and I don't want to be the king, but I believe that everybody needs to have a voice at the table, and we need to make sure that all of those voices or all the people that even, because I'm going to tell you, businesses don't think they have a seat at that table. They should. They're the ones that have to basically, you know, take, you know, what we give them. And they shouldn't be inflicted with problems. They should actually have a voice to say, we need, you know, more of this kind of math. You know, your county may have these different needs. And as you grow and expand and bring in more different types of businesses and so forth, then hopefully you'll start being expanding your needs for that type of education as well. I know one of the disciplines in America that is lacking so poorly that we keep on hiring foreigners is engineering. Engineering is a tough degree. It is a tough career. It's a tough field. You got to do academics. It is not something like political science. It's not this, you know, coast along and get your degree and go. Engineering, you have to work to get that degree. So that's one of the reasons why we don't have lots of kids that want to work hard, which is why we keep on bringing in foreigners. And I think that, you know, there's problems with all of this. And these just need to be on the table. We need to start having these open conversations. But the reality is this, as I started this off. The conservative and the progressives are only fighting for the status quo of a coin that shouldn't exist. Constitutionalists, we need to recognize that we need to dismantle the existing system and we need to completely change it. We never want to get the federal government, the guys that fight wars, we never want them in our classrooms again. They may need to be a funding mechanism, but we never want them in our classrooms again. They do a great job in killing people and fighting wars. The best. America is one of the best war nations ever to have been, you know, created and maintained. But we don't.
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
How do you? I understand what you're saying and your mm-hmm. point of view, and I agree with that. We need certain disciplines, you know, depending on where the industries are going and technology's taking mm-hmm. us and things like sure. that. Like you were talking about, you sure. need engineers.
Uh-huh.
Not every kid's going to be an engineer.
That's right.
Telling you right now. But how do we avoid or put up guardrails against what Rockefeller and his ilk did to create this? Because you talk about the corporations need, you know, to be a stakeholder, and yeah, that is one of them loaded terms again, but those stakeholders ended up taking over and building this whole system that we now have to dismantle.
Yeah, well,
and now we're going to let them back in a room to do it again?
No.
How do we stop that from happening?
So the reason the corporations became what they became is decades before Rockefeller was able to get away with these bloody things that he did, the federal government usurped the authority over the states and started regulating and controlling corporations. They don't have the authority to do that. In other words, every corporation that functions within your state needs to be completely regulated and fully controlled by your state. No federal interference at all. And as a matter of fact, because the reason why the federal government came in is to keep these states, because there were too many states that were in so much protection mode that the corporations were basically going, you know, we could do a lot more if we actually had the same guidelines between the different states. Walmart would literally have to function differently in so many different states as they were trying, if they were even existing back then. But like Borax or... I mean, DuPont, they were selling borax. When we look at some of the early day corporations, they were tied to their state. And if they did expand, they expanded and they were separately operated in a different state until the statehood, or I should say personhood, was bestowed upon corporations. And that's when federal government started regulating them and coming in and basically they took over. And they allowed them and enabled them to become these globalist monsters that they are today. We would not have global corporations at all if the American government would not have taken over corporations. You may have had, because when you look at the corporations of Japan, those are government corporations. When you look at the corporations of Germany, BMW is a subsidized corporation. It's a government subsidized. Same thing out of Japan. They don't have free market like we had. Now, Britain did have and does have some free market, but bottom line, my point is that I think it's just education, we're going to clean that up, but if we actually clean up everything, all these other little problems get put into check, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. It makes sense. And if we fix education, then future generations in the next generation will understand how our government structure is supposed to work and the benefits.
And we'll get better
for everyone by that structure, then things will start to change. It will, tide will turn.
Which is why we want to make sure that this isn't a myopic. It's about, it's all about education. Education is a key thing. We need to shut down government regulations over corporations, over labor, over housing, over the environment, over energy, on and on and on and on and on. We, this is why full compliance with the Constitution. But if we want to pick something that is a real sucking chest wound, the education system is it.
Good way to describe it.
Okay.
That is a good way to describe it.
Yeah. So as we really look what's killing this nation, the first thing we want to start attacking would be that. The next thing we would want to attack may be the healthcare system, because that's actually killing us as well.
Yeah.
Because that's become a monstrosity that is just burning trillions of dollars a year.
We and that also goes back to the learning deficiencies that I was talking about that have created this necessity for diagnosticians in the schools to determine what learning disabilities this child has developed because of their generations of being bombarded with, you know, weapons, chemical weapons, basically.
Yep. Yes. Yes, 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 yes. So, anyway. No,
I wanted to ask you, before you were talking about how the government allowed or the Supreme Court allowed for corporations to have personhood, before that, was that when the states would charter corporations or companies and their charter depended on them being contributing to the public good and they, like a fiduciary
corporate, you mean governments? Are you saying governments would charter corporations?
Like states.
Okay, states, maybe. Maybe, but if, for a state to do that, it would need to be in their constitution. Now, eventually, it started getting added. And yes, I think most states actually have those things in their constitution. One of the things that, again, you know, if I'm sitting in the room, I'm at the edge of the table, I would tell everybody, woe be unto you if you allow your government to create charters and, you know, create their own corporations. It's one thing to have public utility services. It's one thing to have, you know, public services. That doesn't have to be a corporation. It could be a co-op. It could be something different. But you, all you've got to do is put it in your constitution that our state government will have this control and these powers over these infrastructure issues. Internet, highway, airway, waterway, railway, blah, blah, blah. And then you can dive into the details of how they will provide that, because the whole point is that the state should be ensuring that the best utilization of everybody's contributions for this infrastructure system will give everybody equal advantage. I will tell you that you don't need to have a railway going through every county. You don't need to have a waterway going through every county. You don't need to have an airport in every county. But you do need to have high-speed internet going into every county, because if you give... if you provide people access to high-speed internet, to where we get it to every home, now you've just opened up the world of information for children and for people to start running their own businesses and becoming productive out of their own home. I believe this is a fundamental premise. For a society to become more productive, we have to enable people the ability to be productive. And if you can't create a free market system, a competitive free market system that can be easily and affordably managed like the internet, then it needs to be a government service, period. And you can't do that because we're talking physical and or point-to-point communications. Or we go with, you know, Elon Musk and his how many satellite systems are we going to put up with, you know, his night train of satellites, those types. I mean, when we really think about it, all of the competition, all the money is out there to basically suck every available dollar out of your dispendable money, out of your dispendable budget. You know, we only have so much disposable is what I meant. You only have so much disposable income. And they're all fighting for every penny of it. Energy is a huge sector that sucks out way too much. And infrastructure, these other things, again and again, if government does it and they're actually doing it to where we can actually provide a subscription, like energy, instead of paying by the kilowatt, you pay a monthly fee. If we can actually produce energy, which we can, produce more energy than the nation could even think about consuming right now, if we can do that, then they can actually provide you energy by subscription instead of by the drink, especially because there's no need for the government to be making money off of this. They only need to make money, extra money, for the strategies of making the system better, more resilient, these other types of things. But because it's been in a profit mode, it's not a resilient system. It's all been basically going into the pockets of the people that are, you know, coming up with these glorious ways to line their pockets with gold at our expense. This is why our infrastructure, our electrical grid is in such disarray, because it's been a profit system.
Yes, sir.
So, and because there's been terrible oversight over the whole thing as well. I mean, what really kills me is all of this grid, almost everything that they've incorporated and these corporations have received over the past few years, that they've been standing up these public utilities or whatever you want to call them, their profit centers, almost everything that they've received, they didn't pay for. They just received at the taxpayer's expense all of our future investments. This goes to, I'm going to use the a sports arena, Qualcomm. So Jack Murphy Stadium in San Diego was no longer being used. Jack Murphy Stadium was built by the people of San Diego. And Jack Murphy himself, I think, you know, kind of backed some of it, but the people paid to build that stadium. That stadium was great until the corporation said, we need to have more highbrow box offices so that we can come in and bring in our people. In other words, create the elitist atmosphere. So they needed to do this retrofitting, and they said, hey, it's going to cost money. Well, the city didn't want to pay for that. Well, Qualcomm came along and said, we'll pay for that. We'll drop a few million or whatever they did. And it's not like they reimbursed the city for all of the money that they paid into what this facility was worth at that time. They only paid for an upgrade, and they got to change the name of the stadium from Jack Murphy Stadium to Qualcomm. Mm-hmm. And see, folks, we're constantly selling ourselves out, because it's just like these toll roads. They're not building toll roads literally through, you know, the hinterland where, you know, there's, you know, no improvements at all. They have to do all sorts of engineering and all sorts of work. They're putting toll roads right next to existing roads which have been all groomed already. It's very easy to lay another couple lanes of road in between a highway or what have you, or expanding it a little bit instead of having to go and do all the engineering of a whole new road. And they're basically giving this over to a private corporation to literally sell you toll access so they can make money. They didn't pay for all of the engineering and all of the work that existed to get them to that point. Do you see what I'm saying? We're all being taken, they're fleecing us constantly, and nobody's putting their foot down and saying, this is just wrong. And it is just.
Yeah, I got a short little anecdote. One of my red pill moments was when I found out through some minor research that the state had a person that came up with a way to use ground up tires to do roadbeds. Yes. And especially in Louisiana, we have problems with the heat. Mm-hmm. You know, it affects the roadways and they break up real easy and different things.
Yes.
And they refused to use this process, which was like 50% cheaper and lasted four times as long, where they wouldn't have to spend as much money repairing roads. They refused to use the process because if they didn't spend all of their highway money, then they would get less the next year. And then,
right. Okay, so they had the similar thing in Washington. They had a similar thing in Washington. There's the exact same technology because the water doesn't sit on that road. It's not an oil seal, so it's not watertight.
Right.
And so in Washington, they actually had a big segment of I-90 going into Seattle where they had this road surface that they did this to just show people that, you know, when it's pouring down rain, it still looks like a dry road compared to the rest of the highway because the water just seeps through it. And so everybody's going, wow, why don't we do this? And that's the problem.
It's too cost effective.
Right. As a matter of fact, they want to make sure that there's always they're making sure that the problems will occur next year to keep the same people employed. And because it's a system.
Exactly. Right.
Anyway. Yeah.
It's a parasite is what it is.
Right. And lo and behold, we've actually covered the entire show on these topics. The whole point isn't whether anybody's right or wrong. The problem is that you need to make the decisions for your community and set the tone for your state to start heading in the right direction. And the only thing that would make it the right direction is if it's yours. Don't do what I say. I mean, I'd be happy to give you my advice, and you're getting your money's worth right now. And by the way, if you don't think you got your money's worth, go ahead and cancel that check you mailed me today.
Yeah, put in for a refund. We'll gladly give you back the price of your admission.
Yeah, yeah. Just don't let, you know, make sure you send me an email to say, hey, GR, I'm going to cancel that check I sent you because I don't want the embarrassment of trying to go and cash it. You know, save me some time and embarrassment. Just let me know that, hey, I'm not going to pay you for today's advice. And I, you know, because this really rings home because there's all sorts of people that demand my help and advice. But then, you know, I say, well, I'm not going to dally in these types of things because it's a waste of my time. And they go, well, are you too good? And I go, you know, are you paying for what you're getting already?
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody will want more and more until you start creating the boundaries. And so you start saying, hey, hold on here. You know, I don't mind doing this for free to help you with these types of things. I have a very specific focus in constitutional compliance and building constitutional compliance committees at the county level, at the state level, and at the federal level. So that we're no longer bamboozled on government saying, well, we decided we're going to do this. They actually have to come and say, we have these powers, and this is a derivative of the power delegated, and so we're going to do this way. That's fine if it's derived from the powers granted. But no more can they just take and assume powers, because that's what's destroying you, that's what's destroying us, and that's how the global corporations, WEF, the World Forum, all of these people are basically attacking us because we're conducting business that way. We're out of time. Thank you so much, Sean.
Thank you, brother.
Anything else? Any 5 seconds, 2 seconds, 3 seconds?
I'm good, brother.
All right. Well, so folks, tomorrow we'll have Tammy with us. And so tomorrow we're going to dive into the Articles of Confederation so that we can finish that up. And if I remember correctly, I think we had a go back for Tammy. So we'll dive into the go back and then we'll do the Articles of Confederation. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.